I am going to be sharing so much wisdom and experience from my own 10 plus postpartum times, as well as the hundreds of women I've attended as a midwife during the next Mothering the Mother in-person retreat here on Oahu. The dates are September 13th and 14th, 2024. You can learn more and reserve your spot at indiebirth.org/motheringthemother-Oahu. That's indiebirth.org/motheringthemother-Oahu. Can't wait to see you there. My name is Marin Green. I walk the path of a sacred midwife, mother, and spiritual gangster. My role is a keeper of wisdom of the ancient ways of being. I trust Source as my ultimate guide. There is nothing more radical than feeling and listening to your own soul. On this podcast, you'll hear about my real life as a mother to 10, a sacred birth worker, a priestess, and a creator of the new earth. I see my life purpose in my children, in leading the sovereign and radical birth community of Indie Birth, and in embodied learning and living. Join me in the remembering of who you really are. You are powerful. It's time for the weekly podcast. I am really excited to chat today about birth worker embodiment and what that has come to mean to me. First, a brief update. Let's see. It's been a weird week. I'm not sure how you all are feeling, but there is a full moon and a lunar eclipse in the next 24 hours. And maybe I've been reading too much about it and anticipating it, but definitely things have been a little wacky. And for me, the way that's been showing up really has had this feeling of, oh, it's not going that way. It's going this way, whatever it is. And that's been both on inconsequential levels and more serious levels of just being a little surprised, but also not, I suppose, since this time, eclipse time tends to be like that, at least in my experience. So yeah, just having this feeling of, oh, now we're doing this and it's over here and that's not at all what we thought we were doing. So no hidden meaning there, no big announcement of any kind, just been feeling that way in pretty minor ways. Rumi is not feeling well. That's very rare for him. I don't think he's been sick but a handful of times in 3 years. But the big kids have brought through some kind of virus, I'm sure, and his little body is so hot. It is so hot this afternoon that it was hard to leave him downstairs with Jason because he only wants to be held, of course, and he's like a little hot potato. Oh my goodness. So taking care of him and trusting that his body will fight it off just as other kids have pretty quickly. But yeah, kind of being another one of those, oh, I guess we're doing that right now. Ozzy is sitting here, and he might be yet another example. When Ozzy came to us 3 months ago, and Ozzy is this second dog, if somehow you missed that, he was really different than he is right now. And again, I don't think that's unusual-ish for an animal to go through a transition, and 3 months is not a long time. But again, this eclipse energy of just sitting with, oh, okay, now we have to deal with this. He's been displaying some less than agreeable to humans behaviors. So it just adds stress, really, because I do care about him. And having a dog, having a rescue in particular, although certainly purebred dogs and puppies have their own set of issues, having a rescue where they don't, you don't know where they came from, you don't really know their history, can really be a challenge. And it always strikes me as so sad in a way, but I've been trying to be with that as well. Just that Ozzy is his own being, his own soul. He might be in a dog body, but there's nothing to feel bad about. I'm sure he's had difficult parts of his life, just like people have. But somehow he's here and we're treating him very nicely. And of course, I don't know his lessons, even though he's just a dog. Certainly he has karma and, you know, reasons that he's in the body he's in. So I'm trying not to make him a victim. He is his own self, but some of his behaviors are not compatible with our family. And so worst case scenario, you know, maybe it doesn't work out, which is really hard as a dog lover, right? To even think about it. I feel like when you adopt a dog, you really do make a lifetime commitment. And I've certainly had it not work out. I've certainly had dogs where it was better for them, really, to go somewhere else, right? I wasn't their forever home. So we'll see. We'll see with Ozzy. I have faith that he will transform a bit into an animal that is really nice to have around. I don't doubt it, actually. I think he has a lot of great qualities. And really, he's not aggressive. He's not violent. I think he's just got a lot of trauma. So he's right on brand for my exploration and interest these last couple of months. He really is. He's right on brand with his attachment traumas and who knows what else that really do still live in his body. He's actually, as I'm saying it, I'm realizing that he's like this living teaching example for me of, you know, a creature that is still acting as if maybe someone's going to hurt him. And I think that's really where some of these behaviors stem from. I don't think he's thinking he wants to be disobedient or be mean or anything like that. It's really just his body. His body reacts and you can see it. This dog cowers if you know, raise an arm for some reason, like to get something even off a shelf. If he sees you, he really cowers. So, not an accident. I'm sure Ozzy will continue to teach me maybe about a lot of the things that I'm learning in different ways. And I wouldn't doubt it at all, actually. Now that I'm saying it out loud, it's been perfect talk therapy for myself. I realize that that's probably part of his mission here, and I'm grateful for that. And of course, we have some good help here to do our best helping him integrate his trauma. All right. Well, that's about it for an update. I'll leave you with this dog trauma idea. Because Rumi's not feeling good and because I have so much to say, I'm not going to pack it all in. I'm going to try my best to focus here today on embodiment and what that means to me, what that means in the world. And then I want to take it into birth because I've realized in the last year, after experiencing the terrible experience that I had, I don't know what else to call it. I should give it a name. I should give that birth a name so I don't have to keep saying, oh, that birth that was almost a year ago. I've learned so much in that time. And I've realized in that time that I feel really passionate about holding space for other women in general, of course, but particularly those in birth. We've got doulas, we've got midwives, we've got student midwives, we've got all kinds of people with different titles or roles that sit with women and they sit in the birth room. And what I'm learning and what I'm continuing to learn here just feels so relevant. It's almost like, how did I get this far in my role as a midwife without knowing it, you know? And that's humble, right? Like, I did not know. I did not have this piece. And somehow I meandered along. So it's obviously possible. It's obviously possible. But my own life experience, as many know, brought me to this crossroads about a year ago of I won't do that again. And by that, I don't mean all births. I meant that, some of those patterns and some of those choices that I made, and I will take complete responsibility for that. I'm not blaming anyone at all, but I will not do some of those things ever again. And I'm realizing in saying that to not do means that there needs to be another way. And for me, the study of somatics, somatic experiencing, and embodiment in the last year have proven to be this other way. And it's like a light bulb went off for me. Like, oh, this is the piece. And there are lots of pieces. So not saying I have them all. I don't know that anyone does. I don't know that any of us do. I think that's why we're here on this earth, doing the best we can to raise our vibration, to raise our consciousness, so that we can go forward in more service and in more love. But we're all figuring it out. So this is just one piece of the puzzle for me. And because I came here to teach and to share, it makes sense. So embodiment, according to Google, is the ability to sense, accept, and express the various states of the body in the present moment. It is a skill that can be learned and improved with awareness, and it is important for mental health, personal well-being, self-improvement, and spiritual growth. Good job, Google. Maybe that was an AI, I don't know, but in any case, that's a pretty accurate description in my mind. And I particularly liked the whole first sentence, the ability to sense, accept. Well, I might have issue with that word, but okay, sense, accept, and express. And express, I do feel that. It could be movement, right? It could be whatever. The various states of the body, and I like that too, because the feelings, and it doesn't say feeling, but the sensations are states of the body often. Now, of course, when we're talking about something that feels traumatic, it is a stuck state perhaps, but it is still just the state. It's not our body. So if we're feeling angry, we're not angry. It's just the body is in that state. We're not permanently angry for the rest of our lives. I mean, hopefully. And even if we were, it's still a state. It's just maybe one that stuck. So I liked that, the various states of the body. And then the present in the present moment. Exactly. So one more time, the ability to sense, accept, and express the various states of the body in the present moment. Genius. Thanks, Google, again. Another short definition, I found this in some anthropological article. So, sorry, don't know who said it. It says, broadly speaking, in anthropology, embodiment is a way of describing porous, visceral, felt, enlivened bodily experiences in and with inhabited worlds. I like that one a lot too. And that one, I can feel it more. I don't know if it feels that way for you. It feels closer to an actual sensation itself. It's so descriptive. Embodiment is a way of describing porous, visceral, felt, enlivened bodily experiences. And that feels so true. Enlivened even, right? Like with life. It's not always the sensation we want to feel, but it is life. Feeling is life. When we can't feel it all ever again, and it's not something we can recover, that's probably when we won't be in the body anymore, is my guess. I can't quite remember my time between lives enough to tell you more than that, but it is a bodily experience. And just sitting with that, you know, our bodies, and I know for me, I totally take my body for granted a lot of the time. And not just that it's healthy, that's really important, but just that it's here It's mine to inhabit this life, and it's its own being, doing all of these fantastic things, keeping the body running, cleaning the blood, pumping the heart, right? All of the physical and physiological things the body does. But then also this gift of being able to feel in the body. I won't go on a huge tangent here because it is related, but I'm in the middle of Peter Levine's book and I can never remember what anything is called, so I'll have to look. In an Unspoken Voice, How the Body Releases Trauma and Restores Goodness. So Peter Levine is the creator of somatic experiencing, which is the training I'm doing. And last night I got to the part in the book where he speculates why we have consciousness. And that's a really interesting question. So by that, by consciousness, I think what he's saying is, why do we feel anything? Like, couldn't whoever made us or wherever we came from, right? Like, it would have maybe been possible that we didn't feel things inside of our body. We could have been made in a different way where, you know, if you hit your hand on a desk, you feel that, but nothing is going on inside, not emotion, not feeling, not rage, not trauma, nothing. And, you know, I think he said, something along the lines of like, why, you know, there must be a reason, because obviously being able to feel also causes a lot of suffering. So I'll leave you to read the book, and I wouldn't say there's a one sentence answer to that question. I'm sure there's many responses that are physical, that are emotional, that are spiritual. I think there's a lot of ways to look at that. Like, why can we feel? What is the purpose? He didn't mention this, at least not yet, but certainly connection comes to mind for me. If we have the ability to feel, it opens up all kinds of pathways. It opens up relationship, right? So think about it. If you couldn't feel anything, and some people have a really hard time, by the way. So if you're someone that is kind of frozen and you've had a lot go on in your life where feeling in your body is super tricky, maybe you've noticed, I don't know, that relationships are more challenging, that being close to people, right? Because you're not feeling yourself. So it's harder to relate to other beings. So that's my idea. I don't know if he goes into that yet, but his one idea that I did read through last night was on the more physical safety plane, if I recall. So it was a long thing to read, honestly. He's not the easiest author, in my opinion, to read. He's brilliant, but it's not so easy to read sometimes. But anyway, it came down to safety. Like, if we can feel, then we can have time. And if we have time, then even animals can sort of gauge when they might be hunted, or, you know, when the right time to spring on another animal is. So it was kind of a long answer there, but I'll leave it at that. And it's something that maybe you want to reflect on. Whether you do or not, maybe that was enough. I think it's just fascinating, really, because if we could have been made another way, and we could have, then there must be a purpose. And I know that gives me some peace, just personally, because, you know, feelings are a lot. And I'll go into it in a moment, but there are people that struggle to feel, and there are people that maybe overfeel. So it's not like anybody gets off easy, in a sense, with this whole concept that we were put in human bodies that were made to feel. Embodiment. I wanted to add that before I got into this work, I've heard the word. I've heard embodiment. I think it's also widely used nowadays. I think it's in a lot of places, which is ultimately good. But I remember a couple of years ago hearing it, and not understanding what that meant. So that's on me. I never went to look it up. But there was something about it being presented, and I can't remember who or where, so doesn't matter. But presented with kind of a judgment on it, like embodiment is this thing that some people have, and they're really secure in their own bodies and, you know, really in touch. That's what I thought it was, honestly. So I never used that word because I didn't really like it. And I guess I didn't really get it because that's not what it means. But I think it can come across that way. So that's why I wanted to read you some definitions. It doesn't mean that you're more intuitive because you're embodied. It doesn't mean you're better. It doesn't mean you have an easier life. It doesn't mean you're calm all the time. All embodied means, and I'll keep it simple, my own definition, is that we are able to feel in our bodies. That's all it means. So we all switch off all of the time, I think. I do. Sometimes I'm not embodied because I'm not feeling. I'm not connected to what's going on in there. And I think that's really important when we talk about birth work. It's also really normal. So it's not about not being embodied. Maybe the goal is not to be embodied all of the time, right? Just like this idea of being calm. The idea is not to be calm all through your life, I don't think. I mean, maybe there are, you know, guru meditators that feel that way or live that way. But for me, being not that, that's not my goal. So my sense is that being embodied 100% of the time, I don't know. I don't know if that's a worthy goal. Because sometimes when we're not embodied, we sort of go somewhere else. And sometimes we need to do that. And the way we do that can happen on social media, right? I mean, you can be disembodied multiple times in a minute or in a day. So to me, in my own life, if I had a goal, it would just to be aware of when I wasn't embodied. So you can choose for you. Maybe you want to be embodied 100% of the time. I'm okay with not. I just want to know when I'm doing it. I want to know when I'm not here better than I have. So that's my definition. It's just, are you able to feel? Are you connected to what your body's telling you in this moment? And that's all. That's all it is. So it's a fancy word for something that in theory is pretty simple. So I might share some stories. We'll see how this flows around how that has shown up for me in birth work. Being embodied or being disembodied, I suppose, is the opposite. But just letting that all settle for a minute. Letting that settle, this idea. And I'm sure your wheels are turning already in all of the ways for yourself. And if you do work with women, because of course, the natural extension of a birth worker being embodied and maybe teaching this or modeling this is the obvious, that the women we're working with also can benefit, and everybody can have the same value around listening and allowing our bodies to lead us down the path that is meant for us. And that's ultimately, I guess I'm kind of cheating or giving you the end goal here, but for me, that's best part. That's the best part. More people in the world that are more embodied and connected can be their true selves. And I really think that's a huge way that the world starts to shift. So something like our power, you know, what is our power? I've been using that phrase for years and I still love it and I still mean it, only it's more now to me. So my power isn't just, you know, my connection to source. It isn't just my creativity. It isn't just my deep knowing that lives in my womb. It is all of those things, and it's also embodiment. I think being in your power goes side by side with being embodied. Big ideas, big, exciting, fun, squishy ideas. I love it. So I wanted to talk a little bit about feeling in the body. I already mentioned that sometimes people don't feel, and I've been there. It might be the situation you're in a sense. I mean, ultimately, part of this lesson about embodiment is that it always comes back to us, but we might be in a situation that activates our dissociation or our freeze state, right? So one of the states of the nervous system can be freeze. So when we're in freeze, we don't tend to feel. So that's one possibility. And, you know, again, we might all embody all of these, or, you know, embody, disembody, whatever, at different points in our own life. But not feeling is a thing. And so while that might be characterized by, again, this frozenness or numbness or lack of sensation, what I've been learning is that a lot of the time, what's actually under there is a lot of feeling. So it's like so much feeling that it just got shut off because maybe it wasn't safe or fun to feel what's in there. Probably disembodiment. Again, it's not a bad thing. It's just not connected with what's going on in the present moment. We kind of go somewhere else. We're not really in this moment. Our brains maybe have us thinking we're yesterday or, you know, in the future even. When we are able to connect with feeling, and so that's being embodied, it's not always roses. Sometimes when we're embodied and connected to what we're feeling, it's great. Oh, that feels so good. Oh, that reminds me of this. Oh, I feel so comforted. Those are great things to practice and find in our bodies. But sometimes we feel things we don't want to feel. And we can think it's about someone or something else, but it always comes back to us. Not that people don't, you know, maybe say or do horrible things. I feel like that's a prime example from my situation a year ago. Like, these people definitely did and said things, but ultimately the feeling in my body was not new. So it is a new level of self-responsibility to be embodied, because we're accepting that whatever we are feeling, if it's not roses, it still comes back to us. And that doesn't mean it's about fault. There's not like a charge, a judgment on it necessarily. I mean, sometimes we do have one, and that's a whole other thing to work through. But it just is. It is just there because it's been there and it's probably related to something else. Another version of embodiment, and again, these are just examples that we can feel, maybe when we're sitting with women or even on our own, is that we do feel, we feel certain things going on in our body, but they are kind of like in sympathy, in a sense, for maybe someone we're sitting with. And I think that can ring true in the birth worker space for sure. Most women that are doing birth work are empathic. And that's another word that has a lot of meaning and charge behind it. And ultimately, I have come to learn and believe that it can mean someone that just doesn't have boundaries. And, you know, that might be hard to hear. You might not agree. But feeling other people's feelings can be a superhuman skill But if it starts to affect you, if it starts to infringe upon you and change the way you feel and change the way, you know, you would respond, then you don't have any boundaries. So I think that's become, in my opinion, this kind of accepted definition of empath. And I think I want to be really choosy and probably not use that word a whole lot for myself. I would rather be embodied or disembodied, frankly. But empath, and people use that so frequently and almost with a badge of honor, you know, like, oh, I'm an empath. Okay, you feel a lot. That's awesome. And you can sense other people's stuff. Really, that's great. But do you know your own boundaries? And with somatic work and what I'm talking about of feeling in the body, you learn to better own what's yours because you're more in touch with it. So again, it's not that we can't be triggered to feel something else, but we take responsibility for our part in that trigger and, again, sometimes have to pull back our own boundaries because it's not even ours. What we're feeling doesn't belong to us. So we don't need to overanalyze it or keep it sometimes. And lastly, another variation on feeling that I was pondering is the just ignoring what we're feeling because we don't trust it. And I'm raising my hand over here because I've definitely done that. I'm still learning, as many of us are. And again, in this space of attending births, it comes up all of the time with birth workers. All of the time. So, sitting in circle, as I did with the group a couple months ago, and I'll be doing again, actually, in this Beyond the Mind birthworker circle, is feel into some of these ideas around intuition, around responsibility, because ignoring what you feel, or sometimes it's not ignoring, it's like you're not even aware in a sense, all comes down to, again, this lack of trust, maybe, or maybe it's just lack of practice. So again, going back to that initial definition, it is a skill that can be learned and improved. And I love that. I love things that we can get better at. I love that for myself. I love that for you. This isn't like some crazy mystical skill like learning to read people's minds. I don't know how to do that. I'm imagining that a lot of that is just a gift people are given. But embodiment is not a gift just some people were given. So if any of these things ring a bell for you, from being frozen, from being dissociated, from taking on other people's feelings to not even knowing what you feel enough to trust it, then you're not alone, especially in the birth worker space, because it is rampant. It's as if all of the education, and ours included, totally being transparent here up to this point, you know, so much of the education out there really doesn't address these super important topics. But, you know, we're all where we are, and the more that we absorb this, myself and Margot's doing her own work, the more we will be able to offer it and integrate it, which feels like the most important thing. So this is just, I hope, giving you some things to think about in your own body, how it feels to be in your body, how it feels for you in your body in certain situations, with sitting with certain clients, being at births, just to start to notice and be curious first. But in any case, what we're feeling in our bodies is being displayed in a sense to everyone else, right? I think we know this, especially women. And I think this is along the lines of intuition and empathic abilities. We can feel things coming from other people. Maybe they are thoughts. Maybe they are visceral feelings inside of their bodies. Well, if that's true, then obviously people can feel what we're bringing in. Whether we want to own those feelings or not. So a great example is, you know, having fear. Maybe you also had a really difficult birth here or there or something, maybe even in your own life. And, you know, you have to go to the next person's birth. If we don't find a way, and there are millions of ways, I'm certainly not saying this is the only one, but if we don't find our own ways to feeling it and letting that work in our bodies or whatever you would say, maybe some people think they want to integrate it. Some people think they want to get rid of it, whatever. But if the feeling is not acknowledged, then we have the potential to bring that to the next person totally unconsciously. But I'm saying that, you know, people do feel it. They do know. So it's not that we have to try to be these perfect humans that never feel anything bad. That's not it at all. I think there's also just in honest relationship, the ability to be more transparent, perhaps, with the way we are feeling. So even though I'm the midwife, right, I could, in my own embodiment, say to a client at a prenatal, you know, hey, I'm feeling that part of your story really deeply. Like, I really feel that. Instead of pretending that I'm a human that does not feel anything, right? And just taking a pause with that. And I don't have to commiserate with her. I don't have to say anything more except, you know, I'm human and this is what I'm feeling. So I think that is even a part for sure of this conversation is, can we be more human in this birth worker space? Are we trying to be this professional that, you know, is not emotionally involved? And I say that carefully because, of course, we don't want to be overly emotionally involved. I've been there. I've done that. And sometimes it's really tricky how that happens for a variety of reasons. So I'm not saying that either. We don't need to be tangled in somebody's life. But this idea that, you know, they're just clients and we sit in another room and just check off boxes has never appealed to me about midwifery. So I suppose I really love this idea of honoring what I'm feeling and sharing it and speaking it when it's appropriate. And if it's not appropriate, then I remove myself for the moment and I take care of my own needs. And this is, again, self-responsibility around embodiment. A little story. I have done prenatal appointments on Mondays for almost my whole life as a midwife. Kind of a weird thing. I don't really know where that started, maybe with one of my preceptors. Even now, that's the day I do all of my virtual prenatals because I'm not seeing anybody in person right now. Anyways, especially a few years ago, I would just get so tired on Monday nights. Like, I would see a lot of women, that's true, and not abnormal to be tired on one hand. But sometimes it felt like a complete drain. And I became aware of this, but not in a way that connected me with my body completely. So one way I became aware of this is, well, I just really felt sort of run over. And I would almost always get a headache towards the end of the day or that night. And it was something once I became aware of, I really was invested in trying my best. And I work with my mentor, Donna Maria, and right, there's all kinds of like energy techniques and protecting your space. But in hindsight, I see now that I just wasn't embodied. And it was all for great reason. I really, you know, in the past have felt I want to meet these women where they're at. You know, I want to like really hear them. I want to really listen. Like, Yes, my intentions were great. However, on the other hand, I was completely drained and useless. Like, it was too much. I didn't stay in my own body. And I was probably bypassing really obvious cues from my body around my own care. And that's the next thing to talk about. So I probably needed to eat more food during that day, but I was always kind of like trying to sneak in food in between clients. I probably could have taken a nap in between, right? I could have left myself space if I had really been listening to what my body was feeling. And of course, you know, back then especially, it felt like, oh man, like there's just some clients that are really draining. And I know now that that's not really true. If that is true, if there are people that aren't the best match, then ideally, if we are embodied, we know that at the beginning. So bypassing that, and that's a whole other topic that we're probably going to cover in this 4-week circle, bypassing that can create problems later. So embodiment is a constant practice. And when we are with women that we are serving, we really owe it to ourselves to be as embodied as we can for everybody's benefit. Another way this can show up for birth workers is knowing your capacity, which really is your energy and your ability to handle stress. So that's like a somatic word that's used a lot, capacity. I actually really like it. And that has given me a new way of looking at your energy, right? So it's not just like, ugh, I'm too tired to do that. Yeah, it can be that. But sometimes on that day, it's just not in your capacity to do XYZ. It doesn't mean tomorrow it won't. So capacity is always changing. And I was taught as a midwife that you really just don't cancel appointments unless you're at a birth. And I don't know who I learned that from, and it's certainly not anybody's fault. I think some of those are my own issues and my own patterns around disappointing people. But pretty much my whole midwifery life, I could count on one hand ever canceling appointments that weren't related to a birth. Because I didn't want women to feel neglected. I didn't want them to think I wasn't reliable. And while there's truth in that, I see it differently now. You know, I don't control how anyone feels, number one. And I'm a human person. So when I was reflecting on this earlier, I remember when I was pregnant with Cove. And I had clients that were due after me, but I was very pregnant. Like, I'm trying to remember what month it was. She was born in February. And I want to say this was around the holidays. So I was very pregnant. And one of my clients had an appointment in the morning. And I had been up all night with this like heinous headache. My pregnancy with Cove was pretty easy, but I kind of forgot how I would have these headaches sometimes. And it was just awful. Like, I wasn't going to take anything for it, you know, pharmaceutical-wise anyway. So I was just in pain, and I hadn't slept, and I was hugely pregnant, and I was just, like, not wanting to go to this appointment early in the morning the next day. Anyway, to my credit, I did cancel, and I remember it feeling like such a big deal, but my body was literally like not able to do it. My body was just like, there is absolutely no way you're going to do this. You can't even drive over to her house. So I had to tell my ego to be quiet that, you know, it wasn't a big deal. She was going to still trust me. And of course, she was like, oh yeah, of course, like we can reschedule. Not a big deal. But embodiment is knowing that capacity. And so I'm not advocating, you know, midwives to suddenly just cancel right and left all of the time. But listen. You know, listen. Listen to what your body needs. I don't know how many people know the story. I believe this was last year, but it might have been 2 years ago. There was a midwife in Minnesota named Rebecca, and I don't know her personally, but apparently she was a very busy midwife, like very many births per month. Maybe some of you knew her. Anyway, I don't know more than this, but she was sleep deprived. I think that was, you know, true because she was so busy. And my understanding is, I don't know if she crashed her car or got into an accident, but she did not survive it. That's such an extreme example, and I certainly mean no judgment on her at all. It has really been accepted and normal that we ignore our capacity on these huge levels, right? Like being too tired to function. And I'm not speaking for her. I don't know the story, but just for myself, if I was too tired to function day in and day out, you know, you might be brought to a breaking point. Hopefully that, you know, isn't as horribly awful as that. But I think the point has been made. So needing rest, needing food, needing to go to the bathroom, needing to sleep, these are human needs. And somehow in midwifery, we have decided we can just decide that we're going to bypass them. And again, I get it as well as anyone. I get it when your phone rings at 2 a.m. You don't get to say, hey, I don't have the capacity for this birth today. But you know, maybe in a perfect world, you do. Maybe in a perfect world, you have someone else to call if you were up all night with your kid, or even if you weren't and you're exhausted. Maybe in a different world, even the women we're serving would be like, oh my gosh, like, don't even bother. I'm going to be fine, right? So capacity seems to also be entangled with ego and our own shit, you know, our own attachment wounds, our own stories about ourselves. And again, I'm sharing that mine was always showing up for people because I felt like they might not rely on me otherwise. Something else I wanted to say about honoring our capacity and needing rest and food and these really basic human things is that it's not just that either. And I love that it's been more talked about in the last few years as far as taking care of your body if you're a midwife or a doula. Like, take care of yourself. Take care of yourself. I see posts all the time. And that's great, but it's only surface level. Rest is great. Rest, again, is just like a basic need. That's not even fancy. But if we're not rested, then our nervous systems start to fry up and we lose our embodiment. We lose our ability to be embodied because we're kind of running on empty. So again, in this perfect world, we're not just rested. We're like full of life, right? Because embodiment, again, is enlivened. And we have the awareness to feel into the depths of our bodies. And, you know, that's where I'm at. I certainly don't have it all figured out. That's why I am doing a 3-year trauma training, because there's a lot to learn. There's a lot to learn about having the awareness to feel into what you're actually feeling. So when I feel that feeling, you know, is it really the person in front of me? Oh no, that's that feeling that I get sometimes. That's this old pattern about, you know, pleasing people. That's, you know, that's what I'm feeling. So for us to do that deeper work where we're able to unravel our own stuff, which we all have, by the way, if we're able to do that, then my belief is that we can then more fully show up for women. So bringing about to back to birth work, I'm sure you can see now how these things are all connected. I hope you can, at least a little bit more. Another way that a lack of embodiment or a disembodiment shows up, and I saw this in the circle I led a couple of months ago, And I don't mean that in a judgy way either. I think most of the women there would admit to being pretty disembodied, but they easily found their way into embodiment in the circle with guidance. So again, practice. But another way disembodiment shows up for birth workers is making choices on the path. And that is something we specifically worked on in the circle. And again, I'll be leading that circle again in April. But for many of the women in the circle, it was like, what am I doing? What is my next step? Am I going to be a midwife? Am I going to go to this school? Am I going to do that? Am I going to do a doula training? Am I going to put my shingle out as a doula? Like, they each had their own decision or choices to make. And it was really helpful for me to approach it a different way. In the past, you know, before I had this knowledge, I very much tried my best to help people make choices from this more mental place, right? So what hurdles do you have right now in front of you? What is keeping you from becoming a midwife? And we could talk for 10 years about that because people have all kinds of obstacles. You could probably list yours right now if you have them. How are you going to make money? Who's going to take care of your kids? How are you going to move for an apprenticeship? The list is really long. And what I have learned in this work and in holding space for birth workers is that they are not ever going to make any huge life-altering, soul-reaching choices by being in their heads. So that's why the circle is called Beyond the Mind. I renamed it that because that's really the work that we did. We witnessed that in each other. And I see that as something that's really helpful to notice in ourselves. So, you know, what do we think we need to do? Because that's how the world is, right? No matter what your goal is, what do you need to do? How will you make that happen? And this circle and, you know, my perspective now is about what do you need to feel? It's not what do you need to do, because you could do for the rest of your life and you will have maybe avoided feeling. And the feeling is what will connect you to your truth. Yeah, I really believe that. And I saw it in action. I see it in action regularly in sessions and in my own learning, that the truth is really in the body. That doesn't mean it's always easy to get to and to follow, but the truth is in the body. So if you're a birth worker, there's all kinds of ways that this relates to you. And the way you show up for people and the way this path feels in your life, the abundance that it brings, the way it affects your family, the joy you have for this work, the burnout, it's all in the body. That was longer than I thought. Thank you for sitting with me. I would love to hear your thoughts. And better yet, I'd love to see you in the Beyond the Mind circle. I will include the link in the show notes, but the circle is open. We begin in April. There are 4 live classes. And if you don't attend them live and you do sign up, of course, you'll get the recording. But they are 4 Sundays in a row. So you can check your schedule. You can check the link, see if it aligns with you, and see if you're ready. I am looking forward to holding space for as many of you as want this experience right now. You can be brand new. There were certainly women that were brand new and just dabbling, just deciding if birth work was even something they were going to consider. And there are more experienced birth workers, midwives, and doulas who can take these same questions of feeling and listening to a deeper level, just because that's what's going on for them in their own bodies. It really was an amazing circle and an amazing space to witness transformation. So I won't lie, I'm super excited about it. I'm super excited to get the chance to do that again and to see what comes. Thanks for listening, everybody. Check out any of our new offerings at anybirth.org. We have our Sacred Sisterhood Doula Program. I have an ancestor class coming up in April. And of course, this Beyond the Mind 4-week container. See you soon.